sukhi na
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Hello, I'm your host, Dr. Vijay Murthy. We are on the third episode of our conversation with the most amazing, lovely Maya Tiwari. Maya Tiwari has shared in the first two episodes about how she overcame cancer and how she healed herself and then changed her path to become the teacher of health. And actually, Maya, when I first met you, I had seen you more as a spiritual teacher. But over the years, I've come to know you're such a humanitarian, which kind of crosses all different boundaries and brings it back to the person. For those of our listeners who haven't had the opportunity to listen to the first two episodes about our conversation with Maya Tiwari, you can always go to listen on demand. What really interested me, Maya, is you started the very first school of Ayurveda to teach people how to use food, how to use food as medicine and inner medicine as a health educator. And then in 1998, you started Mother of Mission, MOM, which took your work to helping those who exactly need that kind of help in the inner cities of New York, where they had no access to any type of health care. But the repeated message I get from you is healing is not just fixing a biochemical imbalance, be it cancer or be it any other illness, but it is something about happiness. I'm really intrigued by how you make this profound, amazing concept tangible.
Thank you, Vijay. It is so nice to be back on your show again.
Thank you.
Once again, happiness. It's a vast topic and it's a quest of every human person. Sometimes we feel that if we are in despair or enduring a disease, that happiness becomes a stranger. That's not necessarily so. Happiness is never a stranger. It's always be our friend. It is the angel that walks with us through the thick and thin of our lives, through the darkness. And I have had to reclaim happiness. It took me a very long time. The service to others was more a help to me than perhaps to humanity, because in that search, service was my search. And in that search was the understanding that whatever happens in the karmic field of our lives, happiness is part of who we are. It's not that I am happy or I can be happy, but that I am happiness. And that switch is what, that shift is so imperative to remember when we are being driven by challenges, especially health challenges.
So am I correct in understanding this, that we sometimes, or most of the times, when we are faced with a health challenge, we isolate ourselves and we feel that we have no access to happiness because of what's happened to us and we feel lonely. But what you're saying, you know, you said that by being part of other people's life and doing service, you became happy.
Yes, because it's not sometimes isolation in the fact of taking a pause, going away into a cabin or into a room in your home or into your garden or your neighbor's garden or into the park, some private space. That becomes very important. But it's not isolation. That is taking pause. That is being at one with myself. That's making that inward journey so that I can continue to make an outward journey. Mm-hmm. The communication with others, and when we are not feeling well and when we have a big despair or big illness, it's really important that we reach out to either community of healers who are going to help us by choice, or that we absolutely look to doing the things that we need to do. For instance, sometimes our closest friends and family can become an obstacle in the way of our healing, mm-hmm. because they feel at loss for our grief, mm-hmm. and then their grief becomes our grief as well. And that becomes the loaded truck. That's not always the case, but it can be. And people don't like to face that head on because it is your closest friends. These are your family. These are the most precious people in your life. So putting that one in the context of what it is, we can go beyond that. We can intelligently seek the help that we need. But before we do that, we have to create. In order to make the right choices, mm-hmm. we have to know that we are happiness, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. That we can make that inner space much vaster, wider, mm-hmm. so that we can then make the right choices about mm-hmm. how we go forward without compromising. But you see, in order to do that too, we have to understand that happiness is not just about getting up and being happy because the sun has risen and the birds are out and they're chirping.
So you're not talking about positiveness or staying positive, which sometimes I find can be quite stressful, because when I'm feeling all this pain and stress and going through these experiences, and also as you say, Maya, that if someone is diagnosed with a condition, there's so much pressure from other people, particularly with cancer. All of a sudden you receive too many messages on your phone, so many phone calls, so many emails, and everybody wants to help you, but it doesn't really help because you feel inundated with all this pressure. And what I'm hearing from you is, in that moment, realizing I am happiness is very important.
It is, and it's a quantum leap sometimes for people, because if you are under so much pressure and the strain of it, we really have to get to the emotional place inside of us that needs to be consoled, that needs to be addressed, that needs to be heard, that needs to be raw and be exactly the way that it is. We have to reach that point. Happiness is not an illusion. It's a very palpable thing in all of our lives. But when we fall into tears and grief and guilt and angst and the suffering emotions, we have to know not how to ignore it because we're fighting for happiness. We have to understand that we can only get back to our happiness through the journey of our grief and our angst and our bitterness and our despair and our guilts.
And how do you do that?
Embrace it. Sit with yourself. Understand what it is through journaling if you love to write. But sometimes when the mind is so occupied with what is angst and bitter, it's very difficult to pick up pen and put on paper, and that's why I found myself with audio tapes and mm-hmm. just taping. You just can press a button and it tapes what you're saying. The incredible thing about that is that we need to be heard. We need to be witnessed, but only by the endearing ear. And oftentimes we are so disappointed with telling it to our closest friends or to our, even to our therapist, and then they get a call and some other emergency comes in and you don't have the endearing ear and you're paying for that. And then, of course, with a friend becomes so overwhelmed that they can't be the endearing ear. So sometimes the endearing ear is your pen and paper and your audio tape. Or even if you don't want it witnessed like that, you'd speak to yourself. You sit there and you're talking to, like you're talking to mother, son, mother moon or father, son or the trees. And you just say, Maya, what's going on with you today? Okay, I am feeling this way and I am angry. Okay, let me go out and shout so the neighbors don't hear me. I can shout my anger out. Be at one with that. Mm-hmm. We cannot escape what we're trained to believe are untoward and negative emotions. They're not negative. They're part of the package of who we are, and they're the stumbling blocks that we have to walk over, climb over, move over, roll over, however we get over them, we have to. The only way we can do that is to face them and be at one with it and accept that it's not a bad thing.
Where does that, you know, inspiration or that thought, that idea come from? I know you have gone through a whole lot of processes in terms of working on yourself. And I'm really kind of thinking, okay, when I was 26 years old, I was working with women with cancer of the cervix. They were stage 3 cancer. And I was doing my research, and I often found that when I asked these women, are you really missing your family or your friends because they didn't visit you in the hospital? They would say, Vijay, every day you come for rounds, that's the only thing that really I look forward to. I'd rather just have this and not have too many relatives and friends come and bother me. And I feel guilty that I have to turn them away. And what you're saying is actually that creating space for yourself, and when you're experiencing that pain, to have a space where you feel listened to without any pressure already takes you to a good place.
That's a wonderful example, Vijay. And I remember that in the wards. I've been in many wards over the 5-year period I was going through the odyssey of ovarian cancer. And I do remember how important it was for that inner space to be taken by me. It is sometimes it's as simple as if we feel that that space has not been given because of the cares and worries of our peers and family and friends, because they always come from a place of care. But sometimes it translates as worry, and then you feel burdened as well. It's easy to deal with that and say, I need the space to go inside and reclaim what it is I need to reclaim. So allow me, please. And people do. They do respond. It's just that we don't take charge of that. We feel guilty about taking charge of that. The number one thing is we've got to take charge of it. Your life is at stake, or your happiness is at stake. All of these things. We can't go to... I mean, look, we can get to the yoga class in the park with the laughter yoga and have the laughter happiness there for a little while. I think it's wonderful if we can just laugh and cry and weep and be. It's wonderful, and it's very therapeutic. But we're not going to arrive at happiness by pushing away what we were taught to believe was negative.
Yeah.
All of our emotions are what they are, for whatever reason they are, and divinely placed there at the right time, in the right place. And I have accepted that. I fought it. I'm strong-willed. But I fought that understanding, too, in my own journey, that no, they've got, you know, the divine has it wrong. That's not mine to carry. It may be somebody else's, but it's certainly not mine, you know. Or that Lord Shiva was busy with the characters that are his disciples, and we can say anything. But it is the very moment when you're angels, if you believe in angels, when you're guides, if you believe in guides, when the spirit of the trees are with you. And, you know, you could do a simple thing, like an incredibly simple thing, like just taking a seed and planting it, even on somebody's earth or in the park, just so that we can have that incredible sense of regeneration.
Mm-hmm. Maya, what you said just makes so much sense, because it's not about pretending to be happy, but actually to experience happiness. Like someone said once that you might have a flat tire, and then you go to a fantastic party. Of course, you can be very happy in the party, but when you come back to your parking lot, you still have a flat tire, and you have got to deal with that. Sometimes, you know, distraction from reality can be more stressful than facing it. But what I'm really interested is, I think it's a philosophical thing to be able to see happiness and sadness as not necessarily dualistic, the opposites, but it is all part of what it is.
The journey of growing into ourselves and towards ourselves, towards our own self-worth, our own self-love. Just a journey of growing. What I found in Linda's case, a wonderful practitioner, she was already a holistic practitioner when she came to me, and Linda was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And the incredible thing with with bipolar is, I mean, we've got so many people who are diagnosed with all of these different disorders, mental, psychological disorders.
Yes, yeah.
That makes it very difficult. She did not want to stay on the drugs that they had given her because she felt that she was not, it was wiping out her whole creativity and she was not able to focus. And even though she was able to keep her emotions at a certain level, she was just not being productive. And it was a great concern to her. And I don't pay a lot of mind to names that are given in various medical conditions,
yes,
because I think the human condition overrides all of them.
Yes.
And the human condition is a mirroring of our mother nature, of course. And there is the mother wound out there, which we can talk about, what I call the mother wound in our nature, that we are all reflecting it in different ways. And one of the first things I said to her, and she was an avid writer and a musician as well, that, look, why don't you write? Write your story.
Mm-hmm.
Please your heart. You're the witness. You're not looking to publish your work, but write it out. Write what ails you, what stands in your way, what it is that shows you the different ways that you're looking at things, what you're responding to with anger, what you're responding to with joy, what flattens you out, whatever. She was a good writer, and she did start to write her journal, and she did eventually publish that book, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful therapy for her, but what it was purging, was the emotional purging of everything she couldn't tell to her good friend, her mother, her psychiatrist, her therapist, and her colleagues. She wrote it out and then went into an amazing meditation course in India mm-hmm. for about a year, and she just took a sabbatical, left her work, went on to doing meditation. She's no longer on lithium or any other drug for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
And she is able to manage the emotion by just accepting what they are, living with it, be truth to it, and making the changes she needs to when they don't satisfy her.
I'm assuming that, you know, when you talk about meditation, you're not just talking about meditation as learning a technique, but also learning the...
how to live.
How
to live.
Holistically.
Yeah.
Because many times I feel even mind-body approaches mm-hmm. or looked at from a very reductionist perspective.
It's a reductionist.
Like view. We mm-hmm. look at food as, okay, mm-hmm. these are the nutrients. So I must take mm-hmm. Coconut oil because it's got caprylic acid and this is a very good thing for me. Or something has resveratrol, so it's an antioxidant, therefore I should do it. So we almost give permission to do certain things because it's mm-hmm. got some biochemical that helps us. So we might do a similar thing with meditation and with happiness. So happiness has no technique.
Mm, that's right.
Happiness is a way of understanding how life works.
Exactly, because consciousness is not a product.
Yes.
And no product can really serve us. And meditation is definitely not a product, and it wasn't a packaged one. She had wanted to go to India. She had wanted to take the trek up the Himalaya. She had wanted to visit the holy river of the Ganges. She did all of those things in a very... let me take care of myself way.
Yeah.
This is my time. And it found it to be beautiful, but she only found that search after she started writing her tome on her emotional discomfort, her emotional... it is a purge. It's an emotional purge. We should never be afraid to do it. We've got to do it when we become ill.
Yeah. So in Linda's case, mm-hmm. it took... that part, but I suppose for every individual it can take different paths.
Different paths. Meditation is not the answer to our happiness, but it certainly is. Whichever form of meditation we do. I love the one where we don't speak, like in Vipassana meditation. That is the silent meditation to me is the loudest meditation in the world in the first year because all you hear is your inner voice not being happy, you know, or your knees are aching, you can't sit anymore, or your, you know, all the aches in the body come to bear and the mind is so loud and the fact that it's a silent meditation is usually quite a joke. But then again, the beauty of that is you can hear yourself. We are so swelled by the sounds of our society and our community and our own noises around us that we drowned out that voice that is our inner space.
Mm-hmm.
And so meditation, whichever technique draws you, and this is what I believe. I really believe when we are ready, the teacher comes. and the right teacher comes. When we are ready and we are open, ready means we are open to accepting that nature can heal us. Something miraculous happens and nature is there. And the aid and guide come with that.
So you're referring to teacher not as a person, but as lessons or
yes,
guidance.
A teacher can be anything. Yeah. One thing a teacher is not is a teacher is not someone you make the investment in your life for and that teacher becomes God to you. That's not a teacher. That's a codependent relationship or a one-sided dependent relationship. Oftentimes the guru or teacher doesn't even know that relationship is getting formed. Our best teacher is within us. The guru is within us, and we all know that. And every person, educated otherwise, with degrees, without degrees, whichever culture, tradition, we follow the same rule when it comes to understanding that I have the guidance within myself. It's simply a matter. Sometimes you need someone like yourself, Dr. Vijay, who can press, you know, or like myself, or like so many thousands and thousands of others who can just guide and shift a little bit and listen to something and then shift a little bit more so that the person is then just, you know, have that moment of, yes, that's it, and go on with their life. You know, there is no miracle to it. It is quite simple, actually.
You made a very important point here, that is, you know, we give away our power to an industry, to a system, to a medical system or a healthcare system or to a person, and it can come in different forms. But what you're saying, Maya, is until we take charge of our own health and realize that we have this huge, immense resource within ourselves to navigate through challenges, we actually cannot be happy. And you also mention a lot about to create that inner space, you would have to empty yourself out.
Yes.
And that kind of reminds me of, you know, one thing that really reminds me of emptying myself out is when I'm thinking of fasting, because I've got to give up my kind of plan. What can I have for my breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Or it also, you know, creating space. So do you think, you know, like meditation helps to deal with the mind, you think fasting
is absolutely something that fasting can help? Is a wonderful thing to do. All native traditions from which we all come from advocate fasting from time to time, some specifically by lunar cycles and other by solar cycles.
So what about lunar and cycles?
The lunar cycles is, I mean, they're ancient traditions. All ancient traditions ran by the turn of the lunar wheel. You know, the new moon, the full moon was to rejoice in the absolute virility of the man and the woman's fertility in her womb and her beautification and the baths and the scrubs and the entire thing that give rasa and beauty to us. The new moon, for instance, is when we are emptying, when the whole body is becoming empty and we are lessening. And, you know, we can do so many wonderful things that is lightening and lessening the bodily waters and fluids. And also at the time, in the new moon cycle, oftentimes the fast will begin there in the Vedic tradition, in the ancient Russian tradition, in the Eastern European tradition, because that's already when the moon is emptying out its baggages. And fasting in that understanding, in that sense, it's not about dieting and losing weight and making ourselves miserable. Some people put themselves to sleep so they don't have to endure the fast, but they're fasting while they're asleep. But we don't have to do any of these things. What we need to understand is
But I must say, Maya, I really lessening. Like fasting for medical reasons as well.
Yes. Well, yes.
Is it okay?
No, of course, it serves all purposes. It serves the human purpose. It serves our journey of lightening up.
Yes.
Lightening the body, lightening the organs, not giving the digestifier a rest is always an incredible thing.
Yeah.
You know, and the first day is always the most difficult. I love food. I love to eat. I have a voracious appetite. And sometimes I thought, that's why I survive so many things in my life, because I never lose my appetite. However, so fasting for me in the first day is always the most difficult, because I would have a yearning for a good baguette or good breads or, you know, some whatever. But once I get through the first day, and usually it would be with fruit juices and warm water or lemon water and warm teas, herbal teas, then the body is accustomed to the fact that the fire is not so aroused anymore. So then the second day forward is usually very easy for me and GAFA types.
So how long do you have to fast?
You know, there's no particular time of how long we have to fast. We can do a fast like this where we fast all day on liquids and mostly water and then have an evening meal that is light and wholesome. And then the next day do the same thing, and then miss meals. Or we can fast completely, or we can do a fruit fast. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we can do it like that. And we can do for 3 days a fruit fast, or we can do a water fast for 2 days. That's yes. Very powerful.
Yeah.
And so it depends on how much. We can't, though, fast while we're running around, being stressed out, running to a 9-to-5, whatever, then taking care of the children afterwards. And then we can't allow, the body needs time to fast.
Yes.
When we're not so driven with activities, it has to be able to pare down activities to where it has the leisure. Fasting yes. demands leisure.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose, and also you're hinting towards the need to rest when you have health challenges. Not you want to be lazy, but actually to be able to allow the body to have that space, the mind to have that space.
This is where the winter and the snows have taught me so much, that all of the earth in the winter climates sleep, resting 20 hours a day. They may get up for 2 hours just to check that they're still alive. It's incredible how all of the animals prepare their caverns and caves and home and store their foods for that entire season of, let's say, 3 months. And they come out just a little bit with their bushy tail and bright eyes just to know that everything is fine. The trees are bare, there is no shelter, and then they go back in the little cave. Why do we think that as humans we don't need the same thing? We absolutely have to go back to the cycles of nature. Winter is our time for rest. And when we are ill, all of the seasons are saying to us, you have not been taking the winter of your time. Mm-hmm. And this is how you do it. You rest mm-hmm. and rest and rest some more. And then you feel something stirs inside of you. And then you can get up and begin to, because that space gets wider and wider as we rest inside. Mm-hmm.
So it's important to pay attention to seasonal cycles, you know, in preventative health from a holistic perspective.
Not only the seasonal cycle. The seasonal cycle is with the seasons themselves. But as humans, any time disease occur, we are looking at the winter season.
So you have to treat it like winter.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, disease doesn't just wait for the winter to come. In fact, it probably comes in every other season. But whenever it happens, you're in your winter season. And if we can work with that at the pace and the whatever, we can do very well.
I absolutely understand, you know, how this understanding of one's illness and embracing that as the reality, becoming happy, seeing happiness as possible in a challenging situation, taking rest and a little bit of fasting, all of this can improve quality of life. But Maya, one question that always is going to be there in my mind as a practitioner and a researcher is that, you know, there's so much focus on genetics as having an important role in cancer. I totally get that because I understand that. However, there's a lot more research which is also looking at how we can influence the activation of our genes by doing certain things or not doing other things. So there's a huge influence of how we can change the genetic expression. We are not just like a computer program that's been randomly activated by someone and we have to live out that program until we decay and die. So what is your view about genetics? And I know reading your books, you talk about ancestry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I refer to it more rather than genetics, more like the ancestral memories that flow through us. But it is what we're calling in science genetics.
Yeah.
And you get more refined in science with the DNA genetics and the mitochondrial DNA and all of these wonderful things. What we write our own destiny, each one of us, in each one of our lives. And we have to remember that. Nothing is pre-recorded that cannot be changed in our vital tissue, in our DNA, and in our ancestral memory. It can all be changed. And one of the things that steadfastly hold people to not changing and to repeating the patterns of ancestral negative patterns, including disease pattern, is fear. The fear that that is going to happen to me. Well, I can walk across the street and the car can hit me. It wasn't in my genetic makeup, but it could happen. There's so many unpredictables and predictables, but the predictables are never predictables. In health and in genetic, it is never predictable. If we buy into the fact that our ancestors had this disease and that we will surely get it, then we are going to be shortening our life, not from the disease, but from the fear of the disease. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to invoke other diseases as well because of the fear. So I would say very clearly that in the work that I've been doing with people, when they go there and say, my grandmother, and I said, it was wonderful because now we know that there is a maternal emotion that we need to deal with the mother wound, and let's deal with the mother wound. We're not looking at genetics having to repeat itself. We're saying there is a condition here that is beyond genetics, and it's something we can absolutely manage. And so many women come to me that have had breast reproductive disorders with cancers, and it really goes back to what I call the mother wound, something that women have been in their devalued for so long in so many societal roles, and the devaluation of women's power and women's innate ability, that primordial feminine, has to be restored. And in the book, which we'll talk about later, Women's Power to Heal, it is about reclaiming that incredible primordial feminine, because we have so much power by the rites of passage of being a woman and being born in that physiognomy. That anatomy, that psychic anatomy, gives us that passage that's quite powerful. But it had been devalued over so many centuries for so long that we look at it as a wound but not really identify it as a mother wound. So I would rather, and have been doing over these many decades, working with women to heal that mother wound for themselves individually, different reasons, different cases, different conditions, different ancestry,
and how
different
do you do
genetics.
That? How did you do
through
that?
Through the practice of, we do breath work, we do by breathing, there is yoga, there is food, of course.
Yes.
But there's also understanding what we've inherited from our maternal ancestry and paternal ancestry, and what's been playing out within us and what hasn't really quite fitted us, and what has become a negative play in our belief system. These things, which we write about, we talk about, we audio it, we do many different things, but we bring light to it. It's very easy to and visible for me to detect it in women, because I had detected it first and foremost in my own maternal ancestors, and then again in myself, with their journey and my journey, and then a continuation of being uprooted and then exported and uprooted and exported. I've had to look at that memory of the mother wound. And losing my own womb, so to speak, was a huge mother wound. Mm-hmm. You know, and later I was called Mother, Mother Maya, because I served such a maternal role for so many women and children, and some men as well. But we don't have to be called mother this and mother that, because the most important mother is the inner mother, the one that we have to reclaim as women and look at our wounds and not forget about the genetics, but not pay undue attention to it. It doesn't predict anything in terms of your life. There's been vitiations in all of our ancestry. Some of our ancestry have a tendency to diabetes, and some to heart disease, and some to cancers, and some to every possible thing you can, mental illness. And it doesn't mean that you're going to have it or I'm going to have it. As I said, we can have another unpredictable that was never recorded in our ancestry, but that's not where we're going to live. We're not going to live with these thoughts.
So the message really is that not to live by fear, and in fear there is no healing. There is a selfish question for me. I really listened to everything that you said with rapt attention, and it makes total sense. But what about men like me?
I love men. First of all, I love my father. And when he died early in my life, which was 30-something years ago, 31 years ago, automatically my guru came, and he was sort of my father as well, and then I loved my guru as well. In fact, I loved them so much I took the robes, even though that at that point I had a sense that it might not be the right thing. But the for me and for my journey.
So as a man, you know, how man, should I be really yeah. looking at, you know, I understand, you know, your birth.
Exactly the same woman. Way, because yeah. what we have the primordial masculine as well. And the primordial masculine and the primordial feminine do a dance together. And once the primordial feminine can refind herself, she influences and in so many ways turns that shift around, that wheel around, so that the men also, in their primordial right, reclaim their primordial masculinity. Because, in fact, it wasn't just the primordial feminine that got devalued. It is the primordial feminine, because she holds the nurturance of life together and the nourishment of life together. If that core point is vitiated, it will play out in every other primordial field. So as she brings herself together, her children also become repositioned to the core, and certainly our men as well. And by the way, Dr. Vijay, the men have been doing this of late. I'm seeing the younger generation not so strapped by the protocols and the tightness that, you know, the imprisonment that they place the masculine roles and figures in. A topic for another time. I'm told I should write the book called Men's Power to Heal, and I will certainly think about it.
I mean, I think it's a very relevant topic to talk about, because we know, I mean, as a researcher, I know that actually healthcare utilization is more amongst women, not because they have more diseases or illnesses, because they take responsibility for their health and they're more open about facing their health situations and seeking help and actually sharing their experience and wisdom with others, whereas men still tend to be shy about focusing particularly on the healing aspects. Mm-hmm. Yes, when it comes to biomechanical aspects or biomedical aspects, they're quite open. Mm-hmm. Because I know in my own practice, if I ask them to do a 48-hour fast and see if they have become ketogenic, so it mm-hmm. kind of can help their diabetes control, mm-hmm. they come up with these, ketone stick results, and mm-hmm. they say, actually, yes, yeah, my numbers are looking good, they feel happy. Mm-hmm. Whereas they never talk about their feelings. And not never, but not so much. But what you're saying is, for healing, we all need to come out of that mold, thinking that we are biomechanical or biomechanical components, but it's
that was
much
a role
bigger.
That devalued men. And even though it was the patriarchs who devalued the women, still they devalued themselves by setting a prison, setting up the gates and the walls for men to be living in this tight role where they were not even, where crying was even considered a negative, where the emotional outpour was not to be done. And it has influenced our society in such poor ways, whereas women, despite the devaluation of women, mm-hmm. the community of women has never been completely missing.
Yeah.
Women strive in communal work
yeah.
and community, and somehow it's a raging factor that no one could suppress.
Yeah.
And so it's there. Now we need to form the community of men as well, but community of men and women all together.
I think
is really
need to
where
form
it heals
a community
of everybody, exactly,
because,
precisely.
Because, you know, when a woman or a man is going through this challenge of an illness that's very scary and fearful, it's the caregivers, it's the friends, it's the partners, it's people who support them who also need to get into that space to understand what's happening. Sometimes the person may be very open and evolved to think about healing, but if people around that person are looking at it from a very reductionist perspective, that becomes a stress. Maya.
The peer pressure, yes.
Is there, you know, I know it's very difficult to kind of statistically say 3 tips to be happy, but, you know, I would quite like to kind of form myself and listeners to focus on three key points that we can work towards to seek happiness or to become that happiness that you have been talking about in times when we are faced with health challenges.
Get up in the morning is a very good tip. If we can't do it when the sun rises, don't feel guilty about it, because when, as I said, we need much more rest than when we are in a state of well balance. So get up in the morning, go outside and look at the sun, or look through the window and find the sun. You know, step outside if you can onto the grass. Drink warm water in the morning, preferably with lemon juice, because it starts to activate your digestion and help you to move. And if we feel immobile, we have to do some little thing that is mobility driven. Mm-hmm. One is the sight of beauty and nature around us. Two is drink something, that the water that reminds us that we are alive. And the third thing is mobility. If we can do yoga in the morning, it's great. If not, a little walk. If not, stretches, gentle stretches, depending on our condition. There are the three reminder points that I am happiness, and happiness comes in swells. And right now I'm not doing the best with my happiness, but I'm doing the best that I can do.
Yes, so it's not an absolute. Mm-hmm. Happiness is not an absolute, or sadness is not an absolute, but you can walk towards it.
It is difficult for people who, for instance, have been extremely busy, extremely athletic, extremely successful to be felled. And these are the people that I especially talk to a lot, because what it is, of course, to the poor person as well. But for these people, they demand of themselves things that are impossible when they're going through the gateways of difficult diseases. And they have to shift into the small, simple, but precious things. Mm-hmm. Or else we're comparing our what is about to be our new self to the very old self.
I think this really, you know, kind of again brings back to the initial point that you made when we did the very first episode with you, is an illness can be a transformer.
Illness is always a transformer. However, we have to be truthful to everything that's happening within ourselves in order to allow it its power to transform. Illness is interesting. It's like you were talking about the leech the other day and how the leech can get onto the body and suck so much blood. And then, but then the leech, other than just bloodletting, the leech puts something back into the blood. Mm-hmm. An enzyme of some sort that somehow gives it some memory.
Yeah.
Now, illness does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Illness.
It takes away, but it gives.
It takes away, but it gives back something if we allow it to do its transformation and we guide it through a clear inner space.
Mm-hmm. As we come to the end of this episode, I just like to remind our listeners that in the first episode, we looked at how it is important to recognize that any illness, particularly cancer, can be a transformer, and then you need to create inner space. And in the second episode, we looked at how food can be medicine and the kind of relationship we need to develop with food, not just as phytonutrients, but in a much larger context of how we are part of nature. And in this episode, we looked at how to be happy and to realize that actually we are happiness when we work towards it. And in the next episode, in this journey from a challenging health condition like cancer to completely becoming healed, what are the subtle aspects we need to be looking at? And in fact, Maya has written a fantastic book, which I have used so much in my practice and my teaching, which is Women's Power to Heal, which came out in 2009,
yes.
I suppose.
Yes,
and
exactly.
It's been selling a lot
all
because
over the world,
because of the messages that it has. And I must say, you know, both women and men must read that.
Yes.
Because it's, although it's called Women's Power to Heal, it's actually, I would say, it's Power to Heal.
It's Power to Heal, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And we will be back with Maya in the next episode, which will be the concluding episode with Maya. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and your wisdom and the amazing practical tips that you have given and the powerful messages that you have been sharing with us.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Sarve bhavantu sukhinaha.